Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
President Biden returned early this morning to Washington from his trip to Europe, and now he won't stop calling the White House his flat.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth chats with Steve Sciarippa and Michael Imperioli, who host a podcast Talking Sopranos. But first, a closer look.
Republicans won big last night in a closely watched race in Virginia, and now the finger-pointing has already begun, with some Beltway insiders ludicrously blaming progressives for the results. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Look, it's just a tough political environment for Democrats right now, with Joe Biden's poll numbers sagging and concerns about the economy and inflation on the rise. And after almost 20 months of pandemic life made worse by the Delta variant, people are just exhausted and pissed off. And it went the other way 4 years ago after Trump became president. Democrats won by a landslide in the 2017 Virginia governor's race and then again in the House in 2018. That's just kind of how American public opinion works. It waffles back and forth, like your mom deciding between chicken or fish at a restaurant. You know, as soon as the waiter takes your order and walks away, she's going to turn to the rest of the table and say, I think I should have gotten the fish. Then order the fish. But the chicken's supposed to be good here. Then stick with the chicken. Do you think they have pasta? Yeah, Mom, it's an Olive Garden. I thought that meant they had olives. Well, it's true. This has happened before, and that public opinion is cyclical. It's also true the Democrats know how badly they got their asses kicked last night, as one analyst explained on MSNBC shortly after the results started coming in.
What do you think the story is here tonight thus far?
The story is, I'm not going to call it a blowout because we don't have the final numbers, but I will tell you somebody in high up in McAuliffe's camp who was there with McAuliffe put it this way to me about an hour ago. It's a bloodbath.
All right, well, first of all, bloodbath is way worse than blowout. Sound like an EMT trying not to jump to conclusions at a murder scene. Look, I'm not going to pronounce the victim dead just yet, but as you can see here, his head has been chopped clean off. So I'd say he's 50-50 to make it. Where's the head? I don't know, over there. So even McAuliffe's campaign admitted it was a bloodbath, although you wouldn't know it from McAuliffe's reaction after his speech last night.
3.2 from the driveway of my house.
I never thought I would say this, but have you thought about taking dancing lessons from Donald Trump? I mean, seriously, man, read the room. You're dancing like a grandpa at a wedding after the bride ran away from the altar. Come on, everyone, let's party. No, grandpa, not now. Jessica left. That doesn't mean I can't get down. It does mean that, grandpa. It does mean that. Republicans figured out that they could use a twin strategy of keeping Trump's MAGA base motivated by using their right-wing propaganda network to feed them red meat on the one hand, while also running a candidate who looks like the dentist who gives you the gas for a cleaning. No reason we should both be uncomfortable. That supposedly moderate image helped Youngkin win over some of the swing voters and suburbanites that propelled Democrats in 2018 and 2020.
Without Donald Trump as president, can Republicans keep those gains that Donald Trump helped them make. That's the combination that would win this night for Glenn Youngkin. Inroads in the suburbs with equal Trump enthusiasm in those core Southwest Shenandoah Valley rural areas of the state. That's the balancing act he's been trying to strike as a candidate. That was the goal for Youngkin in densely populated, Democratic-heavy Northern Virginia. It wasn't win. It was make the kind of inroads I just showed you. And then it was, could he get the kinds of votes in the rural parts of the state that Donald Trump was getting? Could he get the kind of support that Donald Trump got in Southwest Virginia, for instance, in Trump country, in sort of the bellwether swing area of the state, and in the core Democratic areas of Northern Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, just county after county, city after city tonight, hitting his number.
First of all, as much as election night sucks, it's just great to see Kornacki back in his element. I mean, it's like seeing a rare, beautiful anglerfish as you drown at the bottom of the ocean. Kornacki's like the poli-sci teacher who's happy to supervise detention. Come on, guys. We're going to do electoral math. Everyone start by drawing your congressional district. Okay, Kevin, I feel like you've taken a few liberties here. But he's right. Republicans were able to keep the Trump MAGA base energized while also winning over suburbanites, which, if they can keep it up, is a disastrous combination for Democrats going into 2022. It's like if the Jets suddenly figured out they could run and pass the ball. Wait, what? We're allowed to throw it, too? But we have to give the defense a heads up, right? Out of politeness? We don't? By the way, Jets won a game. If they win again on Thursday night, we're just going to shut this show down. I mean, if the Jets are good, we're out of a business. Democrats need an answer for that. And the answer, by the way, is not to blame progressives for actually trying to get done. As some Beltway insiders are apparently already doing, a reporter for Politico tweeted last night, Dem members are already texting me blaming progressives for debacle in Virginia. I mean, are you insane? Progressives are the one trying to pass a bill that actually follows through on Biden's agenda and improves people's lives. The mansions and cinemas of the world are the one all over it and dragging it out so it's longer and more painful than Terry McAuliffe dancing on stage. Just take it down. Take it down. I don't want to look at that anymore. Most of the individual elements of the progressives' agenda, drug price reform, paid family leave, expanding Medicare, and support for childcare are very popular when you poll them individually. But you actually need to pass them and give people a reason to vote for you. Because just saying we're not Trump doesn't work when Trump himself isn't on the ballot. It's like if Taco Bell's slogan was, hey, well, at least we're not Chipotle. Who knows if passing a bill would have made any difference in Virginia, but dragging this process out has been political poison for Democrats. Manchin and Sinema have turned the Democrats' domestic agenda into an excruciating, never-ending nightmare slog that has turned off voters who stopped paying attention months ago. I mean, honestly, even I have trouble following what's in or out of the bill on a daily basis, whether there's a deal or not, whether there's a framework for a deal or not, whether there's a tentative agreement to proceed toward debate on negotiations toward a tentative framework for a potential deal or not. And I'm supposed to be paying attention to this stuff. I mean, granted, I've been a little distracted by some of my personal obsessions, like our show's efforts to get a Ben & Jerry's late-night ice cream flavor called a closer lick. Ben & Jerry's still hasn't greenlit our request, despite the fact that we've already done all the work for them. We came up with a name, mocked up the container, and even found a way to include our cue card guy by coming up with a recipe that includes Wally Nuts.
Ugh. Seth.
What?
Leave me out of this, please.
Oh. Well, I guess those nuts are going to be a little salty. Want to know what I think? I think it's because they're from Vermont and I'm from New Hampshire, or as they call us, upside down Vermont. They're just jealous because we're a real state and their state capital is a drum circle. Anyway, we sent them all this information only for them to announce their new flavor, Rachel Marshmallow Crunch, which you've asked me was very a rocky a rude.
I'm out of here.
Fine. I don't need you and your cue cards, Wally. Where was I? Voting. So yesterday people voted. All right, I do need the cue cards, Wally.
Yeah, I thought so.
All right. For a guy who doesn't like ice cream, you sure know how to make a meal out of it. The point is, there are a lot of factors at play, some of them within Democrats' control, some of them not. And the difference this time is we have massive existential crises looming over the country in which one party is entirely captive to an aspiring authoritarian who wants to overthrow democracy, and his party is entirely on board. Even Youngkin enthusiastically welcomed Trump's endorsement while also keeping him at arm's length and declining to stand on stage with him. For example, at one point, he happily accepted Trump's endorsement, and then at another, said he had nothing to do with the tele-rally Trump held for him and acted like he barely even talked to Trump.
Well, I'm honored to receive the president's endorsement, and I do think it just reflects the fact that all of the Republican Party is coming together.
A lot of Republicans would be thrilled to be on a stage with Trump so close to Election Day, not so much in Virginia. And it sounds like Youngkin won't even get on the phone with him.
He has no plans to participate with the former president in that tele-rally on Monday.
I haven't been involved in that. The teams are talking. I'm not going to be engaged in the tele-town hall.
In fairness, even if you're a Trump mega fan, I wouldn't take a call from him. You know how hard it must be to get him off the phone? I mean, remember when he used to call into Fox and Friends and they just sat there for an hour with blank looks on their faces, like tourists who accidentally bought tickets to an off-Broadway show called Dear Evan Handjob? I didn't think there'd be this much nudity, and that actor is definitely too old to be in high school. Does he have a cast on his penis? In another appearance with reporters, Youngkin said straight up that he wouldn't appear on stage with Trump and hadn't spoken to him.
Would you rally with Donald Trump if he came to Virginia this week?
Well, he's not coming.
Have you spoken?
No, I haven't. I haven't spoken with him. This is about Virginia.
He's sweating like an undercover cop during a drug bust. You wearing a wire? No, why would you say that? Because you keep whispering into your nipples. Hey, I'm just giving him a pep talk. Look. This is about selling illegal drugs, right? Now speak up, because my nipples also want to score. But this clip is revealing for many reasons. On the one hand, it demonstrates the trick Youngkin pulled off of keeping Trump's base in line without fully embracing Trump as a person. When Republicans know they have the structural advantages of the Electoral College, gerrymandering, and voter suppression to help them, they can fall in line behind Trump without hesitation. But when they actually have to appeal to swing voters in a state like Virginia, they talk about Trump the way parents talk to their kids about the Babadook. He's not coming here, and even if he did, we wouldn't let him in. Side note here, but the Babadook has the least scary name for one of the most scary horror villains. Like Leatherface, Jigsaw, Pennywise, you know what you're getting. But the Babadook is Australian, which makes sense because it sounds like Aussie slang for when you drunkenly your pants. Oh, bad news. Had a bit too much last night. I accidentally Babadooked in my trousers. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, politics. But the truth is, no matter how much they may try to differentiate themselves in tone or style, any Republican who takes Trump's endorsement and courts his MAGA base is signing up to support his authoritarian ambitions and the existential threat to democracy he poses. There's no way around that. And while Youngkin kept Trump at arm's length, he also dabbled in some election trutherism of his own by calling for Virginia voting machines to be audited. The only reason some people don't quote-unquote trust the voting machines is because people like Donald Trump and Mike Lindell have told him not to. In fact, last week, Lindell went on Steve Bannon's podcast to once again repeat the insane lie that China hacked our voting machines to steal the election from Trump and claimed he had proven his theory multiple times.
We validated now that this was an attack by China. We had it validated before, but I just got it revalidated by independent sources, and we've got the packet captures that go right through the machines.
No, you got it revalidated. Well, that certainly is legit. He sounds like a dad with his teen daughter at the mall who just went back to the parking lot to get his ticket stamp. The attendant told me I needed to add more time, so I got it revalidated for another 3 hours so you could go back to the mall and buy some earrings at Doc Claire's. Also, Youngkin jumped on board with the right's new freakout over something called critical race theory, a thing they can't define and that isn't taught in K-12 schools anyway. Fanning the right-wing moral panic over critical race theory was one of the key pieces of Youngkin's strategy, as you can tell from how many times he said it.
There's no place for critical race theory in our school system.
I will ban critical race theory.
I will ban critical race theory.
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 He said it so many times, you'd think he was trying to summon it Beetlejuice style. Maybe heard in urban legend that if you say the words critical race theory three times into a mirror, your 14-year-old will become woke. So Republicans of Fox News have successfully weaponized the panic over so-called critical race theory, but I'm sorry, it shouldn't be radical to teach children about the history of racism in American society. No offense, but Kids should be able to read Toni Morrison without taking a Babadook in their pants. Again, elections are cyclical and a lot can change, but there's no getting around the fact that things are bad for Democrats right now, and they lost badly last night. Some of the reasons are out of their control, but one thing they very much can control is doing concrete things to improve people's lives, which would give voters a reason to keep them in power. Otherwise, we're going to see a lot more of this on election night in 2022. This has been A Closer Look.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Our guests are actors you know best from television's iconic series, The Sopranos. Their new book, Woke Up This Morning, is out now, and new episodes of their podcast, Talking Sopranos, are released Mondays across all podcast platforms and on YouTube. Please welcome to the show Steve Sciarrippa and Michael Imperioli. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, pal.
You know, there's this interesting thing happening, which is, you know, Sopranos is the most popular show on television. It was such a part of the zeitgeist when it aired, and now it's having this whole second moment, it feels like, not just your podcast and the book. Many States of Newark is out now. And I feel like the one thing people forget who are watching it now is that it was the biggest deal in New York City, this show, when it was on TV. And you guys were, like, the biggest celebrities in the city. You were the New York Post covered you everywhere you went. And I'm wondering, did the actual wise guys ever reach out to you and tell you what they thought about the show?
Well, I lived in Little Italy on Mulberry Street, for a couple of seasons, right? So it was a Monday morning. The show had aired Sunday night, and I got my dirty laundry. I'm going down to the dry cleaners, and I'm walking down a block. A guy stops me, Rocky. He goes, hey, Steve, hey, come here. Look, you know I love the show, right? But anybody who ever whacked anyone, that's not how you do it. I said, okay, Rock, I got to get going.
I had a similar experience at Rayo's, where there was an attempted actual mob hit that, like, there was a stabbing or so, shooting in there. I wasn't there that night, thank God. But I was there with Tony Sirico and Vinny Pastore. We were at a table, and at the other table was a captain in one of the family, I think maybe the Columbo family. Don't quote me on that. But Tony knew the guy, and the guy comes over and said, you know, I can show you the real way how to strangle someone with piano wire. And luckily, he waited till dessert to kind of tell us that, but I thought that was...
And then didn't Jim get a crazy call one night?
Gandolfini got a call in the middle of the night, anonymous call. He never figured out who it was. He answers the phone, and the guy says, listen, we like what you're doing. You're doing a really good job, but know one thing. A Don never wears shorts. Click. That's true. He never figured out who it...
I just love... I like to think that there's a family meeting where they're like, somebody's got to make a phone call. We can't have people think of Don's wear shorts.
You know, makes us look bad.
We're going to give the mom a bad name.
Come on.
You know, one of the things about this show is, you know, you're all, you know, you all became, you know, so well-known from this show, and people forget that a lot of you weren't well-known at all when the show was cast. I mean, James Gandolfini was relatively unknown, and I guess Lorraine Bracco was maybe the most famous person because she'd been in Goodfellas.
She had been nominated for Goodfellas for Academy Award, and Jim had been working, and Edie Falco, and they were all working actors. Michael was working, but listen, Uncle Junior, Dominic Chianese, 69 years old when he gets the show. He's sleeping in a lazy boy living in a studio apartment above a restaurant.
Wow.
Tony Sirico, Paulie Walnuts, he's living on his mother's cot, 55 years old. You know, I had a full-time job. I was an entertainment director in Las Vegas, and I came here for a wedding. You know, I had been acting a little bit, came for a wedding, auditioned, and I got the job. And the first year, I had to fly myself out, put myself up. It cost me $24,000 to make $22,000.
Your agent chipped in 5%
of
the difference.
My agent told me not. Believe it or not, my agent said, don't take the job. They're not going to take care of you. He is no longer my agent, obviously.
One of the reasons behind starting the podcast was it started to occur to you based on interactions that people were re-engaging with the show all these years later, that you had fans that maybe weren't even born yet or were certainly too young for the show when it first started airing.
Yeah, in 2019, I was shooting a pilot in Central Park, and this kid walks up to me from Scotland. He was like 20, and he lifts up his pant leg, and there's a tattoo of me on his calf. I was like, what? What is that about? And apparently there's a lot of people that have gotten Soprano tattoos on their body.
How many people have a tattoo of Michael Imperioli? Anybody?
And then, you know, just like 2 days ago, I got tagged on Instagram from tons of people dressed up as me and Adriana for Halloween, which was pretty wild. All different types of people, all different sizes, ethnicity, and, you know, nobody's shy about being a Soprano.
And so the podcast almost got derailed by the pandemic, right? The original plans of getting the two of you guys together.
Yeah, you know, the reason we started the podcast, so we got approached to do one. We knew all these younger people were watching the show, and there was a lot of Soprano podcasts out there with from people who had nothing to do with the show. So we're going, well, what the hell do they know? You know, let's do a podcast. We were there, right? So we did all this press, and we were getting ready to start, and then the pandemic hit. And then I said, like, who really gives a about a TV show?
Right.
You know, the world's coming to an end, then we're going to, who cares about Paulie Walnuts, right?
Yeah.
So... And then we started hearing from people. You know, we're waiting for this. We're binging. We're locked in the house 23 hours a day, as we were. Depressed as hell. And we found Zoom somehow, and we did it.
Yeah. That was another rule of the mob, was never use Zoom.
Don't use Zoom.
Never wear shorts. Don't ever do it on Zoom. And you guys, one of the things you do in the podcast, you interview people who are on the show, and you've also been rewatching it. Do you have unique memories of watching it as it aired? Was that something you do? Would you watch it on Sunday night with the rest of us?
I would watch it, yeah, with my wife on a Sunday night if I was home, you know. The only time we watched it together, we were in Florida at the Hard Rock for the finale, right? And it was nine of us. The main cast, nine of us, drank champagne. And even though I knew it was going to fade to black, I was like stunned. I hated it. I said, what the hell is this? And Michael loved it. Jim didn't know what the hell was going on. Nobody knew what was going on. And that was the only time that we watched it together. Otherwise, you just watched it on Sundays, you know?
I did an improv show that night. It was my job to tape it. And then everybody came back to my apartment. And when it went to black, every single person looked at me thinking that I had not taped it long enough. And, like, the greatest relief of my life was when the first credit came up on screen. I'm like, son, oh, my God.
Everybody.
You know, there's a really good story that involves this building, kind of connected to The Sopranos. About 20 years ago, some nut sent anthrax to 30 Rock and
Bison. Yeah, I was working here.
Okay. So, Tony Sirico played Paulie Walnuts, figures he's next on the list. Because if you want to bring down Western civilization, you got Brian Williams and then Paulie Walnuts.
Yeah, absolutely.
So... he figures out, he gets his assistant to go to the mailbox with rubber gloves, brings him in the house, and puts his mail in the microwave and zaps it for like 30 minutes, figuring somehow...
that'll stop the anthrax.
That'll neutralize. Yeah. I never knew that that was effective.
I don't think it is. Yeah.
Well, what it did do, the mail went up in flames. But he didn't get anthrax. He survived.
So they know, Paulie Walnuts is the guy with the wings.
Yeah.
And him and Grandpa Munster are the only two people in the world with that hairdo. It never took off like the Elvis or the Rachel. You know
what I mean? Nobody went into their stylist and was like, give me a Paulie. Yeah. Were you guys, because, you know, part of the joy of the podcast is the two of you obviously get along very well. You have a very nice rapport. Were you fast friends when you first met on the show? Did you get along right away?
We're not fast friends now.
Okay.
We were friends for a while, and then the podcast kind of ended that.
Kind of went like this.
Oh, yeah, sure. You flattened the curve.
Okay.
Yeah.
Listen, Seth, I've known you quite a while now, right?
Yeah.
First day on the set, my first day, I'm excited. First day, I wasn't even a full-time actor.
Yeah.
They say, Steve, meet Michael Imperioli. He gave me the fish hand. You know that, like the pay no mind list. Like he went, yeah, how you doing? Yeah, how you doing?
Well, you just said you weren't a full-time actor. How am I supposed to treat you?
The guy's aloof. He high-hatted me. He big-timed me.
Yep.
You know, and he's still doing it to this day.
I mean, he was showing off, handing
nothing
out.
Nothing has changed.
He was handing out business cards from the Riviera. He goes, oh, I'm the VP of the Riviera. He claimed to have invented Pie Gal poker, which I didn't believe. He's, you know, he's
full of deal. This is the deal. Michael's a Buddhist. He meditates. He doesn't eat meat. He doesn't drink. I do everything opposite. Everything he does, I do opposite. On paper, we should not be even in the same room together.
Well, gentlemen, it works out really well. I'm so happy about the podcast. I'm so excited about the book. Thanks for making time for us.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate it. Woke Up This Morning is available wherever you buy your books. Please remember to support local and independent bookstores.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.